All right, turn to Judges. Judges chapter... It does ring pretty bad up here. I'm sorry. There we go. Judges chapter 12. Sorry, am I too loud for the... There we go. All right, Judges chapter 12. I like going to the Bible and digging in, the book of Judges, digging into... there's still a little bit of ring here, so if you could... I don't know what's going on there. Digging into sometimes some more obscure places in the Bible. And that's what we got tonight here in the book of Judges. One of those weird stories. There's a lot of stories you go through, especially Judges is full of them, where you're doing your Bible reading and you get to this place and you're like, what in the world is happening in this chapter? You read chapter 12 of Judges and you're like, why did all that just happen? Why is it in the Bible? That doesn't even make sense. And then you kind of go on. And so we're going to try to make sense of it tonight, and it requires going a little back a little bit and understanding the backstory. That is, in fact, most of the story is the backstory there in Judges chapter 12. But I'm going to read verse 1. Before I read verse 1, the title for tonight's message is, Do I Have to Be Included? We like being included in things. And we've all been there. And if you're in a church and you care about the things of God and you have talents and abilities and you want to serve God with your life, we've all had that feeling where something's happening, they're doing something, and they didn't ask you. They didn't ask you to help. And it's something you're good at, something you love doing, and you probably could have done it better. You want to be involved. You want to help. Sometimes it's maybe not something with great skill. It's just like, I could have showed up, and they took forever. Why didn't you just ask me? I could have come and helped pick up some boxes and help and get that done. I love doing that sort of thing, and you feel left out. Sometimes you feel in the out crowd, right? You know, those in the know, the favorites, they get asked and they're out doing their thing and they're talking, they're involved, and you're like, man, I'm not included. I've not been asked to be part of what's going on there. And we've all been there, we've all had that feeling, and you know, that kind of pit in your stomach, and you're like, man, I got left out again. I got overlooked again, and then if you've walked with God for any amount of time, then you have that feeling from the Holy Spirit of God reminding you that the only reason you're thinking that is because you think you're more important than you actually are. And tonight we're talking about self-importance. And we're going to go to Judges chapter 12, verse 1. And the Bible says, And the men of Ephraim gathered themselves together and went northward and said unto Jephthah, right? So Jephthah is the judge that just delivered Israel. He just won a big victory and defeated the Ammonites, right? It says, Wherefore passest thou over to fight against the children of Ammon, and didst not call us to go with thee? We will burn thine house upon thee with fire. Little extreme there. I mean, we've all felt that feeling. Why didn't you ask me to help? Why didn't you include me? But I hope none of us here got to the point, well, you know what? I'm just going to go and burn your house down with you inside it, right? I hope we haven't gotten to that place. And I love the Bible that we can learn from these lessons because it is extreme. You know, it is like, wow, okay, you weren't included, so let's burn your house down with you inside it. That's a bit much, but it actually gets worse than this. And it also, as you read this, you're like, wow, why? And as we go back, we're going to see why this makes why they're doing what they're doing, why they feel justified. So Jephthah gives a great response, and he gives a good reason why they're being irrational here, right? Jephthah said unto them, I and my people were at great strife with the children of Ammon. And when I called you, you delivered me not out of their hands. We already did ask you for help, and you didn't do anything. The invasion came, and you did nothing. And it says this, when I saw that ye delivered me not, I put my life in my hands and passed over against the children of Ammon, and the Lord delivered them into my hand. This is God did this, not me anyway. Right? And it was because we risked our own life because you weren't there to help, right? Wherefore, when are ye come up against me this day to fight against me? Right? It's not just that they came to burn his house down. They weren't threatening just a small, petty act of vandalism. They had an army, and they were invading. In their minds, they were putting down a rebellion. We'll get to that. Then Jephthah gathered together all the men of Gilead and fought with Ephraim, and the men of Gilead smote Ephraim because they said, and look at this, so they're having a civil war, and this is Israel fighting, and that's actually worse than that. They're actually both in the same tribe. They're actually both of the tribe of Joseph. And they're literally killing their brothers now. And then it talks about here, they were slinging insults before that. So this is kind of what's justifying in their mind why they think they're good enough to go and invade and do this. It says, ye, this is, because, so they fought against them, they smote them because they said, this is what the Ephraimites hurled insults at the Gileadites, right? It says, ye Gileadites are fugitives of Ephraim. Among the Ephraimites. So you're fugitives of Ephraim among the Ephraimites and among the Manassites. You are the renegades, you bunch of fugitive rednecks out in the country. We need to get you back in line. So we're going to come here and fight with you guys. And they fought, and Gilead won, right? This is the judge that God had just used to deliver Israel. So kind of you don't want to be on the other side of that particular conflict, and then the ending gets horrific. Not only is there a rout in the battle, but as whether right or wrong, this is what they did in battles then. If you got the enemy running, you ran them down and tried to kill as many of them as possible to make the victory permanent. So the Gileadites took the passage of Jordan before the Ephraimites, right? This was their home turf, and so they got there first to the Jordan River. This is where they were crossing over, and they were trying to escape back across the river. And it was so that when those Ephraimites, which were escaped, said, let me go over, the men of Gilead said, art thou a Ephraimite? And they said, nay, no, I'm just out here for business. You know, I'm not, I wasn't part of the battle. I didn't invade your country. And they said unto them, say now Shibboleth. So these roughnecks out over in Gilead had an accent. And you could tell whether they were from there or not by how they spoke, right? So, you know, there are certain words that if I bring up that word or that topic, my wife will revert to her southern accent. And you could tell that she grew up in the South. You know, the moment you bring up that word or that topic, you start talking about biscuits and gravy or grits or something like that, and all of a sudden, boom, it just switches, and you can tell, oh, yeah, definitely she's from the South, authentic, right? So, again, you say Shibboleth, and they couldn't say it right, for he could not frame to pronounce it right. Then they took him and slew him at the passing of Jordan, and there fell at that time of the Ephraimites 42,000. So what started as anger over I wasn't included drove to insults and threats and quickly escalated to a war that resulted in the death of over 40,000 of the best men of Israel. This is the judges. This is supposed to be, during the book of Judges, you're supposed to have the Israel is fighting against these evil invaders from every side, every kind of ite, you know, the Hivites and the Amorites and the Hittites, and all these guys are supposed to be attacking, and they're supposed to be fighting them off, right? They're supposed to be defeating the enemies of God, and this is Israel fighting Israel, and 40,000 dead? It's horrific, and then it just goes on to the next chapter, and the story continues, and what was that? Why was that? Why on earth did they decide to invade? Why did Ephraim invade Gilead right after Gilead won the day and rescued Ephraim, defeated their common foe, and they 40,000 dead? And there's a lesson here on how do I respond when I allow myself to be more important in my own eyes than I really am. And that's really the issue when we get to Ephraim, is that they were more important. And their self-importance led them to this destructive path in four ways. Number one, self-importance comes from misinterpreting God's blessings. God had blessed Ephraim above the other tribes. and they let that get to their head. God may have blessed you with resources, with abilities, with position, with respect, with knowledge, with wisdom, with intelligence, whatever it is God has given you, don't misinterpret that as you being important. This is God blessing you so you can do something to bless him. God had given strength and numbers and importance and wisdom and leadership and all of this to the tribe of Ephraim for a reason. Now, we got to go back and hear the whole story here, okay? So what is going on? Who is Ephraim? Where is Gilead? What is going on here, right? So these are just tribes of Israel. We know this. Okay, there's 12 tribes of Israel, and we just hear their names, and if we're not careful, when we do our Bible reading, we go through, we just hear, okay, Gilead this, Issachar that. They're just a bunch of, you know, it's whatever tribe, and there's 12 of them, so I can't even keep them straight. Well, we got to understand that the tribes are not all equal in size or importance, okay? There's a lot of little tribes, and then there's two really important tribes, Judah and Joseph, right? Of the 12 tribes of Israel, those became big and important, and really, there are a kind of a balanced look at Israel during the time of the judges. Actually, most of the Bible, you've got Judah and Joseph, and then other little tribes scattered between, okay? It's those two big tribes, right? These are the big tribes. They had larger in numbers, in strength, in importance, in significance, and really, the story is the story of these two tribes and the rest. And Joseph is more than one tribe, right? So the backstory is this, right? Israel, or Jacob was his original name, right? Had 12 sons, right? We know this. 12 sons became the 12 tribes, right? Well, it's a little more complicated than that, remember? First of all, he had an eldest son, Reuben, right? Reuben lost his birthright. It explains it in 1 Chronicles. Reuben was the firstborn. And normally you're the prominent position amongst the family if you're the firstborn son. And the family of a firstborn son maintained that position. However, Reuben forfeited the position. Jacob stripped him. Unlike with Jacob's brother Esau, who sold off his birthright, Jacob stripped Reuben of his birthright because of an act of immorality. An extremely obscene act of immorality that Israel caught him in the act of doing, and he completely stripped him of his birthright. So Reuben lost the position of firstborn, and that position of firstborn was given to Joseph. And we know the story. Joseph is given this coat of many colors. God gives him a dreams of having the other sons, the other tribes, bowing down to him. Okay, so this thing of Ephraim, this is Ephraim of Joseph, right? This thing of importance goes way back in the story here, okay? In fact, it goes back even further than that. The mothers of these tribes and their fighting of importance, and we get that whole thing there with their mother. It goes even further back. But it goes back here, and there's resentment of the importance, but this understanding that Joseph is the most important, and Joseph takes it in humility. Joseph is blessed of God. Joseph is given that, and he interprets it correctly. When he's challenged, he says, well, yes, God's blessed me. Yes, he's made the other tribes all bow down to me, my brothers that bow down to me, but it's not what I think it is. It's not because I'm more important. God sent me before you to preserve life. This is to save people. This is to save us from the famine. He understood that he was given abilities and position and opportunities, not because he was more important, but because God was going to use him to help others. It was because of others, it was not because of himself. Joseph had the right attitude about it, but generations later, that didn't exactly pass down. So Joseph is there, and you know the story. Israel eventually comes to Egypt with the other sons, and now there's 70-some people. There's the startings of these tribes, and Israel is now in Egypt, and he gets there, and Joseph is still alive, and he's amazed, and he's excited, and Jacob does something more than just giving him the position of the firstborn. Joseph has two sons, Manasseh, the firstborn, and Ephraim, okay? So he has Manasseh and Ephraim. He had those sons while he was in Egypt. Jacob thought he was dead, right? Jacob comes there, and he promotes his two grandchildren to the status of children. Now, this doesn't seem like... Like to you, you read it like, oh, these are my kids. And we think, oh, yeah, of course, yeah. Grandpa's like, oh, these are mine. No. It's not like I love my grandkids like my kid. No. This was a legal thing. Of legally, I'm promoting them to the position So now in terms of generations later, in terms of inheritance, in terms of standing amongst the tribes and who is the elder and who is in charge, Ephraim and Manasseh, the two sons of Joseph, are now promoted to be now at the same level as the other, as Reuben and Judah and Levi, etc. So these that were younger, now they're promoted this, and Joseph is promoted above all of them. So now Joseph, and then we have Ephraim and Manasseh now, right? They're now, they're going to give in a double portion. God is going to bless these, and of course it's prophetic. And you know, as Jacob is getting ready to pass on, he asked for the two boys to come here, Ephraim and Manasseh. And if you know the story, and this is so important, I'll read it here. It says here, and Genesis 48, 17, if you want to follow along here, we'll go through a bunch of this going back here. So Genesis 48, 17 says, and Joseph saw that his father laid the right hand upon the head of Ephraim, and it displeased him. So here come the boys, and you're supposed to bless the elder Manasseh above, because he's the firstborn, in rank above the younger, Ephraim. But Jacob intentionally crosses hands, if you know the story, right? He crosses his hands and says, no, I'm going to put, and Joseph's like, oh, no, you got it wrong. Hold on. You know, old man, you got confused here. No, let's switch this around here. This is the oldest one. No, I know what I'm doing. I'm going to bless both of them. They're both going to be great tribes, but Ephraim's going to be more important. Ephraim's going to serve less. He says this. He saw that he, it displeased him, and he held his father's hand to remove it from Ephraim's head unto Manasseh's. And Joseph said unto his father, not so, my father, for this is the firstborn, but thy right hand is upon his head. You got your hand on the wrong head. This is important here. And his father refused and said, I know it, my son, I know it. He also shall become a great people. This is Manasseh, shall also become a great people. And he also shall be great, but truly the younger brother shall be greater than he. And his seed shall become a multitude of nations. And he blessed them that day, saying, in thee shall Israel bless, saying, God make thee as Ephraim and as Manasseh. And he said, Ephraim before Manasseh. Okay, so this is an important backstory. Absolutely. Without that, the whole rest of the story doesn't make a sense. Ephraim is in charge of Manasseh. Okay, these are the two sub-tribes, if you will, underneath Joseph, right? We got Ephraim and Manasseh, and Ephraim is promoted to the rank. So, in other words, the tribe of Joseph is firstborn of all of Israel, and within Joseph, the subfamily of Ephraim is first. That means Ephraim, whoever is the elder, the oldest person in Ephraim, is the highest ranking person in Israel going forward all the way through, right? When the conquest started, that person, of course, was Joshua, the son of Nun, right? So you know him. He was of Ephraim. He was their representative going to seek out the land. At that point, he was still a young man. In other words, he would not attain that rank. But at some point, as the elders died off there in the wilderness, Joshua was the natural leader because he inherited it by right, by birthright. Joshua being the highest ranking person there in the tribe of Ephraim. And Ephraim had a higher ranking than all the other tribes of Israel. No question about it. And they knew it. And boy, we can see they knew it for sure. Not only are they the birthright, the firstborn of Israel, right? But within Joseph, there's really only one tribe. I mean, yes, they both have plots, and they handle them sometimes as two tribes, sometimes three, as we'll get to in a second. But the fact of the matter is in terms of, okay, let's get the elders of the 12 tribes. Okay, Ephraim's there, and Manasseh is subservient to him. So whoever the representative, whoever the elder of Ephraim was, he was in charge of both Ephraim and Manasseh, right? Because he's as a firstborn with the rank. And again, he wasn't literally born first, but he's now been ascended to that rank. So now Ephraim has been promoted by God to be the highest ranking, and the elders of the tribe of Ephraim were the most important people in Israel all the way through the time of the judges, okay? Until God chooses a king, and they continue to think so afterwards that they're still important, and that's where the whole mess comes after that. But Ephraim, okay, I'm the firstborn. I'm the most important. Okay, this is important to understand. So what happens here? They conquer the land, right? Ephraim, that's Joshua, is from Ephraim, right? And they're given the plot of land right in the middle, the most important one. And there in Ephraim there's a town, city called Shiloh. That's where they bring the Ark of the Covenant to. So the high priest and the Ark of the Covenant. Ephraim, really, throughout the entire Judges, is really the capital, the important part of Israel, right? You can go to Egypt and the archives. There's clay tablets that are the archives of King Akhenaten, right? King Tut's dad. And there's complaints from the Canaanites complaining back, asking Egypt to come help them. And they're like, oh, the king of this, Canaanite city they were captured by these Aperu or Hebrews, right? And they went and cut off his head in the gates of Shiloh, right? They saw Shiloh there in Ephraim as the capital of Israel, really throughout the whole period of the Judges, right? Up until it gets destroyed by the Canaanites and the Ark of the Covenant taken, right? At the end of the book of Judges, right? So, all right, that's the beginning of the book of 1 Samuel, but the end of the period of the Judges, right? So here's the deal. Ephraim is the most important, right? And they're given the best land, and Ephraim and Manasseh combined becomes the whole tribe of Joseph, and they're bigger than now. Ephraim by itself isn't bigger than Judah, but with Manasseh, they're the biggest tribe. They're the biggest, they're the most powerful, they're the strongest. And if you're the ranking elder in Ephraim, you're the most important person in all of Israel, right? Maybe the high priest, but he lives next door to you. That's why the high priest is there in Ephraim, right next to where they lived, where Joshua lived. Okay, so there we go. Ephraim, they're important to start off with, right? Now, here's Joseph again. Ephraim and Manasseh combined. That's Joseph. That's the important tribe, right? They're coming. Moses is still alive, right? They're coming around the backside. This is very important backstory to this whole story and the whole battle that's going on here, right? They're coming around the backside, around to come on the other side of the river, right? They're not going up the coast. Remember, they came out of Egypt. They've been 40 years wandering. This is the end of the 40 years, right? And they come up on the eastern side of the river, and they're coming around the back end. Remember, they're going to go across the Jordan River and take out Jericho. We know that story, right? You know the story of Jericho, right? So they're going around, and they come to lands that are not the promised land, right? Remember, Abraham had other relatives other than Isaac and Jacob. So, for example, Esau, right? So they come to Edom. That's the descendants of Esau. Well, that's not, they're our brothers. We're not to kill them. That's not our land. So they ask to go through. They say, no, we won't let you through. Okay, so we go around, right? Then they come to two other countries, okay? They come to the Ammonites and the Moabites. Now, if you go back in Genesis, the Ammonites, okay, this is important, with two M's, don't confuse it. This gets really, you got to listen carefully. Ammonite, different than Amorite. Amorite, Ammonite, two totally different groups here, okay? So the Ammonites with two M's, right, and the Moabites, right, these are descendants of Lot. You know Lot, that Abraham's nephew, right? So they stayed in the land. So while Israel was in Egypt, right, becoming a great nation, their brothers, the Edom and the descendants of Lot and the descendants of Esau, are there making great nations there, because God promised them nations as well, and to the south, even the Ishmaelites, are there south of what the promised land is, and they've got their own land, and that is not for them to take. They're going around. So they go the long way around, and then they come to this area, and there's some Amorites, not Ammonites, but Amorites, okay? So different group. And in the time, this is important to understand, when they were still in Egypt, the Amorites came through and conquered a big swath of land. They're in what is now the Promised Land. They conquered a large chunk of land from both of the sons of Lot, okay? So the land that was originally given to Lot by God, right? Later on, we're talking 100 years later, halfway through the slavery in Egypt, okay? Over here, here come the Amorites, and they take the land from the Ammonites and the Moabites, the sons of Lot, right? They take a bunch of the land, not all of them, and the borders move, and the borders kind of get fixed there. So now, when Moses and the children of Israel come around, and they run into this spot of land. There's the Amorites. Now, this was not land that they were originally planning on conquering, right? This was land that was to be given to the sons of Lot. Now, they're not currently owning it, right? It's been conquered long ago, probably maybe 100 years, I don't know, before by the Amorites, right? Who, by the way, used to be their friends as well. If you, again, rewind your clocks to the book of Genesis, Abraham teams up with the Amorites. They were friends, and they went together to rescue Lot. So these were previous friends of Lot's, right? And then 100 years later, they turn on them and take a bunch of their land. So do we got that here? So who this is? This is the guys that were Abraham's friends, but not related to Abraham, at least not closely, had gone and taken some of the land from Lot's sons or their descendants, right? Then here comes Israel, right? And here's this chunk of land. And unlike with the descendants of Esau and the descendants of Lot, these guys are like, okay, forget it. We're going to fight. I don't care if you go around or not. We're going to attack you. And so they attack Israel. Moses and Joshua defeat them, right? And now they've been defeated, these Amorites, on that side of the river, on the eastern side of the river. So now there's this big chunk of land that they've conquered only because they were being attacked. They were going to avoid the land altogether, but now because they've been attacked, they won the battle, and now they got this land. And a group of the Israelites say, hey, this is great land. I know we're going to go to the promised land on the other side of the river, but this is some good land here, and this is perfect for us to run our cattle. So Reuben and Gad and a chunk of Joseph, a chunk of Manasseh, a bunch of guys from Manasseh say, hey, I like this land on this other side of the river, okay? This is where we're getting to the characters in our story here, okay? So this is where they come from. They say, hey, we like this land over here that we just conquered because they attacked us. Can we have this? So again, Reuben, Gad, but I mean a chunk of Manasseh, half of the tribe of Manasseh say, hey, we'd rather just stay on this side of the river, but you can't just stay there and let us conquer. No, you have to fight with us, but if you come and fight with us, you can come back and get this land. Okay, deal. They make the deal with Moses. That's going to be their land. So this is what they were talking about when they said these are fugitives from Ephraim and Manasseh. This is some of the tribe of Joseph saying, hey, we want to stay on this side of the river up north, and this is the northern. That's why they talk about being north in the story here. So this is up north on the other side, so it's the eastern side of the river. Up north, this is the area. They were really isolated from the rest of Israel. So they're not involved in a lot of the things happening in the rest of Israel. They have a different accent. They're different. They're these hicks that live up in way up in Gilead is the area they called it. So here's in Numbers 32 as it talks about it. And the children of Machir, the son of Manasseh. So this is one of Manasseh's sons, right? Or the descendants of one of Manasseh's sons, right? Went to Gilead and took it and disposed the Amorite which was in it, and Moses gave Gilead to Machir, the son of Manasseh, and he dwelt therein. So this is where the Gileadites come from. They are a group from Ephraim and Manasseh, but they're not fugitives. They're not running away. They're, in fact, quite brave. They're like, hey, we'll take these guys on and clear out some land for us, right? So they go there, and they fight, and they conquer some land, and they take it, right, with courage and bravery. And Moses and Joshua, who's the elder there of Ephraim, all agree this is their land, okay? And they're welcome to it, and it's theirs, okay? That's important, okay? They're not looks. But here's the thing. God is blessing Ephraim here and has put them in this position of significance for a reason. You go through the book of Judges and you realize how many things in Judges center around or take place in the tribe within the borders of Ephraim. A good, huge chunk of it, right? Samuel's from there. The other stories at the end of the Judges, it's always a Levite from the Mount Ephraim, this from Mount Ephraim, this person from Mount Ephraim, and they came through Mount Ephraim. The whole book of Judges centers around that. There's a huge significance there. And God used them to lead and deliver. And again, the leadership that came from Ephraim at the start of the time of Judges kept them righteous and kept them following God for longer than they would have, right? And then you have on the peripheral, a tribe start falling away and Ephraim has to be, hey, we're in there to stop. No, 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 we don't turn away from God. In fact, there's a whole time when these yahoos on the other side of the river start like trying to worship, set up an altar where they're not supposed to. And the big brother, Ephraim, oh, we got to stop that. And they go and stop it. Oh, okay, they just about, okay. Another time when they have to, their Mount Ephraim news reaches them of this horrendous, immoral act against this someone that was traveling through Bethlehem, and they're from Bethlehem. They go through Dan, and they just about wipe out the tribe of Benjamin because of some wickedness and stuff. So they are the police. They're fighting for righteousness. They're keeping evil out of Israel. God put them in that position for a reason. All right, but they misinterpret it as we're more important. So number two, their self-importance leads to hypocrisy. So remember, they called the Gileadites these renegade fugitives. They're unimportant people. You stayed over there on the other side of the river, you know. Whereas we're here, you know, we came to the place that God blessed. We're right in the center of the promised land, and you know, we're content with the lot God gave us. So really? Let's see here. Right? Judges chapter 8. The men of Ephraim said unto him, talking to Joshua. This is when Joshua's still alive. Why hast thou served us thus? Uh-oh, they're complaining. Back in 17. All right, 17. I've jumped the wrong way. Joshua 17, not Judges 8. Joshua 17. Children of Joseph spake unto Joshua, saying, why hast thou given me but one lot and one portion to inherit? Hey. We need a bigger plot. Well, you have a humongous plot. Did you read all that? No. Yeah, but of the place that we are actually in right now, it's too small. Oh, it says, they've given us just one plot to inherit. Remember, this is Ephraim and Manasseh combined, right? This is all of Joseph, and you've just given us this little bit of space. It says, seeing I am a great people, for as much as the Lord hath blessed me hitherto. Oh, because God has blessed me so much, you need to give me more land, right? I'm so important, right? And Joshua answered them, if thou be a great people, then get thee up into the wood country and cut down for thyself there in the land of the Perizzites and the giants. Hold on, what are we talking about? You're saying the land, yeah, the easy to inhabit land that where we conquered the towns in, yeah, that's pretty small. But see all these massive acreage of woods? Start clearing some land and planting farms. Come on. You got the land, you got the manpower. You just said you've got the biggest group of people. You're such a large people. Well, then you should have no problem cutting down those trees and clearing that forest. Oh, and as for down the plain, he says, if the Mount Ephraim be too narrow for thee, and the children of Joseph said, the hill is not enough for us. No. But the Canaanites, they dwell in the land of the valley, have chariots of iron. Oh, they have the chariots down there where the Philistines are. I mean, the Canaanites down there have iron chariots. Both they who are of Beth Shean and her towers and the Valley of Jezreel. So the Valley of Jezreel is part of Manasseh's inheritance. And they're like, well, we can't really take that. So Ephraim has a huge forest that they don't want to log because that seems like too much work. And there's some giants mixed in the forest there, you know, who knows, Sasquatch or something living out there. I don't know what they're scared of, right? A bunch of, you know, well, they say it's the Perizzites, all right? And they probably were pretty scary, okay? But nonetheless, God is with them. Just like they said, hey, wait, you're the biggest tribe. You're the most powerful. God blessed you. And so that's why he gave you some rough country so you can clear it out and scrape off a place there and start a family. That's the whole idea. By the way, that's what Joshua does. Remember, he's from, they're talking to him, but this is the other elders of Ephraim. And Joshua's like, I'm from your tribe. What are you talking? Look what I did. And he cleared out, he chopped down trees and started, he did exactly what he told them to do. He says, hey, hold on, you Ephraim, you don't got enough? Cut down the trees. Manasseh, you don't got enough room? Clear out the Jezreel Valley of all the Canaanites. Oh, but they got these chariots and these towers and it's scary. And so they brag about, we're the biggest, we're the strongest, so you need to give us more. Like, well, if you're the biggest and strongest, go take more. Like, go do it. Get with it. If you really have those abilities, if you really have this, if God has really blessed you, get out there and fight. See, meanwhile, to the south, you've got Judah, and they got the message. They have the same issue, but they're like, oh, yeah. Remember, because they had this guy, Caleb, remember, and his little brother, Othniel, and yeah, we want more land, and they went and took it. They took the mountains. They couldn't get all of the Philistines with the chariots, but they got a lot. They went and took the land, and so that's why Judah ends up with this big plot of land, more land than everyone else. And Judah starts on the rise throughout this period, right? Because they had the courage to actually go and fight. Meanwhile, Ephraim just complained, and they didn't go do it. They didn't chop down the forest. They didn't clear out the giants. They didn't clear out the Canaanites with their chariots. They bragged all about we're so big, but what they wanted is we're so big, you ought to wait on us hand and foot. You got to go get the land that we've already conquered and give it to us and let these little weaker tribes, them go and fight with the giants and the Canaanites. You know, they can deal with it, but we're important, so we need it easy. That's not how it works, right? You see, their self-importance led to hypocrisy. We're more important, okay, then act it. You know, actually be courageous and do the work yourself. Don't sit there and this is this hypocrisy that comes. They're going to one side say, hey, one side, oh, we're strong. Okay, then you're not acting it. There's not a not a consistency with your word and actions, and there's so much hypocrisy for them to sit there and complain about Manasseh going and doing something without their permission. And yet, who was the judge that God anointed at that time? Oh, this guy from Gilead. Okay. Actually, they should be getting permission from him because he's the called judge, right? It, not them. They're not as important as they think they are. So it's hypocrisy. Just like in Matthew 23, Jesus talks to these scribes and Pharisees. He said, saying, the scribes and Pharisees sit in Moses' seat. Just like with Ephraim here, they were important. These scribes and Pharisees, the Sanhedrin, they're important. Yes, God put them in charge. It says, all therefore which they bid thee to observe and do, but do you not according to their works? For they say and do not. They bind heavy burdens, grievous to be borne, and lay them on men's shoulders, but they themselves will not move them with one of their fingers. So Ephraim and Manasseh get this plot of land, and they're somewhat intermingled. But Ephraim says, we're in charge because, you know, Jacob put his hand on our head, right? We're the ones in charge. So Manasseh, you do anything, you've got to run it by us. So that's where the big conflict came from. We're too important. You can't go over there and deliver Israel without our permission. You know, you didn't get your Israel delivering permit. Come on, you got to get the paperwork through first, you know. They're like the county inspector saying, oh, no, you didn't get the permit. You got to tell, you know, like, oh, I'm so important. You know, you didn't file the paperwork just right, and you got to do things my way, you know. That's kind of what they were. No. We're the elders of the tribe of Joseph. We're in charge here. You can't go start a war without getting permission from us. Where's your war permit, you know? It's like, what? That was their thing. We're so important, and now they're acting hypocritically. And Jephthah, he points it out. He says, well, hold on. If you're in charge, then why didn't you deliver us? If you're so important, why didn't you lead the charge against the Ammonites? Why did I have to? Right? And it's hypocrisy. And if I let myself become too important in my own eyes, I get that attitude. Why wasn't I included? Why didn't people run things by me? Why am I not in charge of this? Why am I not singing the solos? Why am I not running this? Why am I not in charge of this? And I get that way, I put myself in this importance. And it blinds me to the fact that I'm acting hypocritical. I'm putting burdens on other people that I'm not putting on myself. They're putting the burden on you. You guys down, you guys from Manasseh, you know, you guys got to get permission before you do stuff, but they're doing stuff without asking God. So they're pure hypocrites. They didn't ask God, should we go over and attack Gilead? There's no way they asked God about that. So they're demanding that others ask permission, and they're not asking for permission themselves, right? Hypocrisy. So number three, the self-importance creates unnecessary conflict, and this becomes tragic. And yes, it's obviously tragic here. Massive war, 40,000 people dead, right? That's bad. But you know what's also tragic is when churches tear themselves apart because a good person, talented, gifted in God, lets the devil creep in this thinking that I'm more important than I really am. And then people are just trying to get the job done. People are just trying to serve God together. We're just doing stuff as a church, and we're busy as a church, and we do so much. There's so much going around here. It's inevitable someone gets overlooked, right? It's inevitable. You're just trying to solve the problem. You forgot about that person, and we asked this other person, and I forgot that this person really wanted to do that and was really good at that, you know? Or sometimes we didn't ask the person because, well, they're doing something more important, so I can just ask this person, you know? But, oh, you know, and we forget the more important. We'll get to that in a second, but... But this unnecessary conflict, and we have churches that tear themselves apart. They start off with a desire to serve God. And everyone there, the conflict comes from, we want to do something for the Lord, but then I don't feel included. I have this self-importance Because I am being used of God and I am blessed of God, and that self-importance then creates conflict between me and pastor, between me and other members of the church, and pretty soon we're fighting each other, pretty soon we're competing, pretty soon it's politics this and gossip that, and we're this conflict. I mean, here the conflict resulted in mass casualties. But in our families, conflict strained relationships, hurt marriages, children who don't respect their parents and aren't growing up with, and churches that fall apart and don't do anything for the Lord. And so this conflict is terrible, and it's totally the thing that's so wild about this story in Judges 12 is just like, this was so unnecessary. This didn't have to happen at all. You know, this is terrible. Why did this happen? It was this great victory and all this stuff, and it was so petty, their complaint. And yet for 40,000 people to die over it, what happened? Well, let's look at the conflict for a second, right? Here, going back a chapter, what you have is Jephthah was called to fight in the first place. Going back, let's look at his story. He knows the story all too well. He's been facing that selfish, self-importance conflict all his life. See, he was born, and his mother was a prostitute. And so what that meant is he was an illegitimate son, right? And so as an illegitimate son, they didn't, even though he was, it says here in verse 1 of chapter 11, he says, he was a mighty man of valor, and he was a son of a harlot. So his dad, named Gilead, right? The area they're in is called Gilead, but his dad was also named Gilead, right? His mom wasn't the official wife. And back then, there's, okay, out of wedlock here, he's born. And then he has brothers, half-brothers, that are born later. They're younger than him. But they are the official heirs, and they don't want him stepping on their importance. And they especially feel the conflict because he's braver and smarter and stronger than they are. So he's a mighty man of valor, and they're losers, all right? And so they want him out because they're making him look bad, all right? This is just regular everyday life for human beings, right? Someone else is making me look bad. They're stepping on my shoes. They're getting involved. They're making, you know, they're showing me up. I want them out. And back then there was a legal thing. You know, you could kick out someone who wasn't an official heir so as to not mar the inheritance. And so they drove him out of town. Not because he was a bad guy, because he was a mighty warrior. And they needed a mighty warrior in a minute, right? So they drove him out of town, and he's living way up in Syria somewhere, right? So in this little town up in Syria, way far north, he's out of town. He's been driven out of town. He's living his life and rejected. And then someone comes up with a message. They're like, oh, we know you're like the guy that actually knows how to fight, and we have a little problem. We're kind of being invaded. You think he can come back and fight for us? And he's like, I thought you kicked me out. You sure? And eventually has to make the deal. Okay, if I'm going to come back, then you have to let me be in charge, right? Are you serious? You just want me to fight the battle and you kick me out again? No, we're we can't handle this on our own. They ate their humble pie eventually and let him back. So he comes back, and the issue is the Amorites, right? The Amorites with two M's, right? Amorites, again, these are the ones that are descended from Lot. And they've wanted to start conquering. They've become stronger. Israel's become a little weaker because they've been disobeying God, and this is part of God's judgment. And the Bible says the Amorites began to oppress them. So some powerful Amorite king, I'm super powerful. And so one of the things that he got in his mind is, I need to reconquer all the territory that was once belonging to our kingdom, right? This includes this chunk of land that now belongs to Gilead, the people of Manasseh, right? Jephthah's people, right? They had, remember that they didn't take the land from the Amorites, right? They took it from the guys who took it from them. So you got this? There's two levels separated here, right? They took it fair because and it was in self-defense as well, right? The Amorites were killed in self-defense, the Amorites, right? The Ammonites didn't say anything about it. They could have at that time, they should have, said, first of all, they should have been friends to Moses instead of opposing him, let him pass through the land, and then help Moses defeat the land, and then Moses would have given the land back to them, and they would have had their land back, okay? But they didn't, and they forfeited it. So they forfeited that land because they didn't do anything for it, and it's been now, according to the chapter, it's been 300 years. This is not like yesterday. This is 300 years they've not been doing anything about the fact they lost the land 300 years ago, and now the king of the Amorites is like, oh, I'm going to be this great, powerful king, right? It's similar like right now over in China, right? There's this dictator, and his thing is, I want to be powerful, and he there's this island, Taiwan, and they've been a separate country for a long time, and no, he wants to conquer them. No, they're still part of our country. They're just renegades. We're going to get over there, and so he's building up, and World War III is on its way, and that's going to start right there, right? So it's a mess, right? They just want to conquer, and they're using some excuse of way back in the day. I think it, and of course, they never owned Taiwan, but that's a whole other story. Same thing here. 300 years ago, yeah, your people owned that land, but not only did you lose it a long time ago, we didn't take it from you, right? So that's the whole conflict here. Again, what is the conflict coming from? A feeling of self-importance. The Ammonites, oh, I'm so important. Should be our land too. Now, you haven't been living there for 300 years. You don't know anybody's great-great-great-grandpa. I mean, you have no memory of what it was even like to live there. There's no trace of you there. You just have this tradition that, yeah, long ago, that was our land, long, long time ago, before the Amorites took it. But the Israelites got them, and so now things are better. But no, it should be our land again. So they've decided they're going to go on this crusade to retake the land that's rightfully theirs because they're so important, right? And so they come and they demand of Jephthah, give us the land, you know, it's ours. And he tells the whole story and the whole backstory there. And no, it's not yours. It's been 300 years and no one's even asked for it back in those 300 years, okay? So it's well more than forfeited, okay? You know, the abject possession legally. I mean, if you were living in someone's house for 300 years and they never asked you to get out, okay, legally in America, it would be yours, okay? It's gone. The property is long since gone. Any claim you had to it is forfeited long ago, but you think you're so important that you should get it back. This feeling of importance, and so this conflict, right? This battle, and the Amorites lost, and Israel won. Jephthah comes back, they do the battle, they defeat. And then, of course, here come the Ephraimites, and they thought, I'm in charge. Manasseh is supposed to be under us. And Gilead, this is this offshoot of Manasseh. These are these rogue element, but they're supposed to be under our authority. We're supposed to be in charge, and they're so upset that they're not included. You didn't ask us to go with you, and so we're going to burn down your houses. We're going to insult you, and we're going to invade. And this conflict, and it escalated, right? Why? Now, this is the second time they've done this. Let's back up a little bit. There was a previous conflict. You remember a guy named Gideon, right? So Gideon is also from Manasseh, right? And Gideon delivered, right, a completely different group, right? So this is the Midianites, and he defeated them, right? Big battle, number 300 guys, sent them packing. And as they're running, he sends a message over to Ephraim. Hey, by the way, we've defeated the invaders. Could you send some of your guys to head them off at the Jordan River, right? This is the reverse of what's happened here. And this time it's Ephraim is going to go. And they do, and they catch two of the kings of the invading army and kill them there. They kill, it's great, but then they are mad at Gideon. They did the exact same thing to Gideon in previous generations. And so they got all mad, right? Let's see here, it's back in Judges 8. It says, the Midianites says, why hast thou done this? Thou callest us not to went with thee to fight with the Midianites. Hey, we should have been included. And I only needed 300 guys. It was God that did this. But you know, they showed with him sharply. And he said unto them, what have I done in comparison to you? So now Gideon is a little more tactful and political. He's a little smarter than in terms of Jephthah, who's just more straightforward, you know, country boy. You know, he just says it like it is. He does say it like it is very well. But Gideon is very political, and he knows the way, if you have an egotistical person, the way you deal with them is you feed, you know, like, okay, oh, yeah, oh, man, yeah, compared to what you guys just did, you guys are the heroes of the day. My little thing with my 300, that wasn't important, but you caught the guys at the river and you killed them. You are way more important. So he sits there and lavishes on praise, feeds to their ego, and they're like, okay, yeah, okay, so yeah, because we're the real heroes today. Yes, everyone agree, and they agree that Ephraim is the real heroes of the day, even though they're not. Gideon won the day. Glad they could help out at the ninth hour, you know. Okay, so Gideon wins the day. And by the way, in between, other crazy stuff happens. If you're not familiar with Judges, I know I'm blasting you with history today, but it's great. Hopefully you can get into the Judges and read. There's a lot of stuff in the Bible, good stuff. And in between there also, remember when Gideon died? There's a man who grew up in Shechem, which is right in the middle of Ephraim. that goes up from, he was one of Gideon's sons, and he goes up from the territory of Ephraim to the territory of Manasseh to the north. Again, it's the same two parties here. And he murders all of Gideon's sons, right? And he comes back and sets up Shechem in Ephraim as the capital of Israel and declares himself king. For 3 years, he's king of it, and then things sour, and they have to get rid of him, and it's a whole ugly mess there. But the bottom line is, the Ephraim is like, no, we should be the center of Israel. We should be the kings, right? And it leads to this terrible conflict, right? That happens in churches too. John, in 3 John 9, John writes this, I wrote unto the church, but Diotrephes, right, this guy here, who loveth to have the preeminence among them, this is someone that thinks he's important, like the Ephraimites here, received us not. Wherefore, if I come, I will remember his deeds that he doeth, pranting against us with malicious words, and not content therewith. Neither doth he himself receive the brethren, but forbiddeth them that would, and chaseth them out of the church. So this sounds like a messed up church split. And this is happening. Why? Same thing. He loves to have the preeminence among them. And that's what's happening here. You have this terrible conflict, and there it's turned physical. But in a church, it's not physical. It's emotional, but it destroys churches nonetheless. If I think, well, it starts off with just that they forgot to ask me to help today. And, you know, and I, oh, hey, I'm important. Pastor forgot me. She should have asked me to sing the solo. I think, no, he didn't. He shouldn't have. But if I think that, you know, oh, he should ask me to sing the solo, what am I going to do? I'm going to let the devil get this little root of bitterness into my heart. And it's going to grow. Notice this root had been growing for a very long time. Gideon, now this judge of remember, they're supposed to be, the prophecy is they would be in charge. Manasseh is supposed to be subservient to them. Ephraim is supposed to be in charge. And now two in a row, great deliverances of Israel coming from Manasseh, not from Ephraim. And for now, generations, that bitterness has been growing. And it finally stews over. Hey, I'm tired of Manasseh not being in their place. They're rebels. They're supposed to be obeying us. And it eventually fumed up to an actual physical war. 40,000 men died. So conflict comes if I think I'm more important than I'm supposed to be. And finally, conflict comes of self. Besides conflict, number four. So look, we've had that self-importance comes from misinterpreting God, right? Self-importance leads to hypocrisy. Self-importance creates unnecessary conflict, and finally, self-importance keeps us from being used of God. It keeps us from being used of God. Here's what God has called me to do, and now it's not going to happen because I'm focused on myself. There's a bigger picture here, right? The bigger picture is that the Ammonites weren't the only enemies. If I flip back to chapter 10, it says, Israel had sinned against God again, and the anger of the Lord was hot against Israel, and he sold them into the hands of the Philistines and into the hands of the children of Ammon. So if you're not familiar with the geography, there's the Jordan River in the middle, there's the Gilead, and they're right next to Ammon. On the other side is Ephraim, and they're right next to the Philistines. Tell me, which one of these should be fighting the Ammonites, and which should be fighting the Philistines? Ammonites are small, and Gilead is small. Philistines are mighty and powerful. Ephraim is mighty and powerful. The bigger picture here is they weren't supposed to ask Ephraim to help. Ephraim had its own war to fight. And instead of fighting the Philistines over here, they were so upset that they weren't in line, that they weren't included in this victory and the fame and the glory and the riches from that victory over here, that they marched over here and warred against them, and 40,000 of their best men died. Now they have no army to fight the Philistines. You start just going through the rest of the book of Judges, you see exactly what happens. Those Philistines grow stronger and stronger. Pretty soon, all of Israel is slave to the Philistines, 40 years. Pretty soon, the Philistines are marching an army right smack into the middle of Ephraim. They don't have an army to fight them. They try to go out there, let's get the ark of God. God will help us now, right? Because we're Ephraim and we're blessed of God, right? Remember all those blessings? But it's all been hypocrisy all these years. So, hey, Eli, send out your sons with the Ark of the Covenant. And they go out with the Ark of the Covenant. And they don't have the 40,000 men they needed to fight these Philistines. And the Philistines come and they kill Eli's sons and they take the Ark of God from Israel right there in the middle of Ephraim. That's all that story. Remember, Shiloh's right in the middle of Ephraim. That this is in Mount Ephraim where this is going on. The battle is lost there. You know, the complete loss, right? And destruction. The Philistines come. They destroy Shiloh. It's interesting. Getting reports there right now. There's a group of Christians that are digging up Shiloh at the moment, and they're finding interesting reports as they're coming back, and they found the remains there. Well, it was all burnt and destroyed by the Philistines, but the platform, kind of where they used to have the tabernacle there, and they found the pit where they threw all the animal bones, and you know, the one leg was missing, you know, just like they told the they're supposed to be doing it in the high priest there at the tabernacle. But destruction, death, so avoidable. They were so focused on their own self-importance that they forgot why they were important. It was about the fact that they were important. It wasn't about why they were important. Were they important? Yes. God made them important. And they were supposed to be leading the charge against the Philistines. They were supposed to be leading the charge in terms of righteousness, in terms of doing right and getting rid of the idols. And they forgot what it was all about and focused on, no, God made us more important than Manasseh. Ephraim should be in charge. Manasseh, you're lower. You do what we say. You stop sending these heroes to save the day. No, we're supposed to be saving the day here. We're descended from Joshua, you know. His name means Jehovah saves, you know. We're the important ones here. And it doesn't stop there. The story goes on as you go through the Bible. You get to where Ephraim and Manasseh, sorry. And by the way, Jacob had already prophesied this. Remember, they wouldn't drive the Canaanites with their chariots out of Jezreel Valley. You know who eventually gets rid of the Philistines in Jezreel Valley, right? It's not the mighty men of Ephraim. It's a little boy with a sling from Judah, different tribe altogether. And God chooses David from Judah to be the king. And Solomon then unites the kingdom. They defeat the Philistines. The Moabites and the Amorites and stuff become their servants, right? They're now all part of the empire and they have to pay taxes. So it is all victory for God's people, right? But Ephraim still remembers we're supposed to be the most important. I never forgot that. Solomon chooses this hardworking guy named Jeroboam. He puts him in charge of the house of Joseph, right? That means Ephraim and Manasseh. He's from Ephraim. He's now the top guy, and he knows that technically, well, if I'm in charge of Ephraim, I should be in charge of all of Israel, not these guys down there from Judah, right? Joseph got the firstborn status, and Ephraim got hit the firstborn status from him. I'm the leader of Ephraim. I should be in charge. And you know what happened? He leads a rebellion against Judah, and Jeroboam, of course, God had that plan, but the thing is, he leads the people away from worshiping God. He should be leading, because why? The tabernacle isn't in Ephraim anymore. Now it's in Jerusalem and Judea. Ephraim was all, they were all about, oh yeah, that's why they said they were so important. Everyone, you've got to come once a year. Everybody's supposed to come to Ephraim to worship at the tabernacle. And they were all about that all the way through the judges. But now that they forfeited that, now the temple is in Jerusalem. Oh, no, actually, we should worship golden calves in Bethel and Dan. Right? They turn away from God because of the self-importance. And you notice, you see it in the words that he uses, right? Why does Jeroboam call the northern kingdom Israel? Because by rights, he's the head of Israel. He is the leader of the firstborn of Israel. This is the house of Israel. That's just the house of Judah. I am by rights, the firstborn leader, the elder of the house of all of Israel, because I'm from Ephraim and I'm more important. What does it lead Israel into and Ephraim? Sin, more sin, more sin. If you're not familiar, Ephraim, the tribal outman of Ephraim, that's where everything happens in the northern kingdom. That's where Jezebel lives. That's where Ahab, all of them, all of that wickedness happens there. Samaria is just right up. There's Shechem there, right up the street. You know, it's walking distance from Shechem is where Ahab builds Samaria, right? His dad and stuff. And they build Samaria, and they build all the stuff, all the wicked stuff that happens in that northern kingdom of Israel, all happens in the middle of Ephraim, the guys that are supposed to be in charge. And the status and the importance of that capital is because we're the firstborn of Israel. And it continues to go downhill. That importance, they never understand what they're really there for. They just keep demanding, we're the most important, we're the most important. Eventually, God, of course, sends the Assyrians and wipes out Israel. You know, the northern tribes are gone. And it comes down to the end of our story here. We have King Hezekiah. He's still in Judah. The elders of Ephraim, the important ones, have been shackled and drug away to Nineveh, never to be seen again. The poor people, the remnant, those that the Assyrians didn't bother taking captive are still there in the land, there in Ephraim and Manasseh, just north. And now, but just south, there's Jerusalem and Judah, and they're holding out, and God has delivered them. You know, here's Hezekiah. He's like, no, I don't know, we're going to get back to worshiping God. And they fix up the temple, and they say, let's keep the Passover again. We haven't done this in a long time, like we haven't done it since, Joshua, right? So we have been all this, it's been so long, and let's do this, and let's come, and let's worship God together. And he sends out a letter to Ephraim, all the people that are still there in Ephraim and Manasseh. So it says here, so the post passed from city to city throughout the country of Ephraim and Manasseh, even unto Zebulun. Here's the response. And they laughed them to scorn and mocked them. Here's the important Ephraim. That I'm so important means when they finally get a letter from the king of Judah. No. Ha ha, you've got to be kidding me. Come to Jerusalem, worship God there. Repent and see if God will save our country. No way. But look at this. Ephraim and Manasseh, so it goes to all of Ephraim and all of Manasseh. They laugh them to scorn, but it says, nevertheless, diverse, that means a bunch of individuals from Asher and Manasseh and Zebulun humbled themselves and came to Jerusalem. But on that list is not Ephraim. So now, in the end, destroyed and humbled, we've got Ephraim and Manasseh, and here's the offer, turn back to God, get repentance, get your kingdom back, have God's blessing again, come to Jerusalem with Hezekiah, let's have revival. And Manasseh, remember, the less important, the renegades, the fugitives, the we're not so important, they humble themselves and come back to God. And the oh-so-important Ephraim laughs him to scorn. What a joke, huh? Turn back to God. We're more important than Judah. Are you kidding? No way. And they're kept from serving God. And sad to say, they're bitter Christians. Long ago, some pastor disappointed them. They were never asked to do such and such, and they never got to do this, and they never included this, and they felt like they were in the out crowd, and they were got involved, and they wanted to do this, and they couldn't, and their talents weren't being used at this church, and they're sitting there doing nothing for the Lord, sitting in the pew bitter. And someone does ask them, hey, why don't you come and get involved? What were you asking all along? Here's the opportunity. Come. Come fight with us against Assyria. Help us stand up against Sennacherib. Let's do this. And now they're finally being asked to be included, and they don't want a piece of it. For too long, they focused on we are the most important. And what a sad story going through the Ephraim, right? Oh, they were always more important than Manasseh. Ever since Jacob crossed his arms, the younger, and they were important. They were important for a reason, so they could be a blessing to others. But they just focused on, I'm more important, and ignored the whole reason why they were important. God has given you skills. God has given you abilities. God has blessed us immensely. And I've got to watch out for that attitude that brings conflict in churches when I feel I'm not included, and because I'm not included, well, why is that? Why does that hurt me so much? Well, because I think I'm more important than I really am. Who's really important? God is. Every good and gift comes from the Lord. And what I have and what I'm able to do from the Lord is all him and none of me, and it's all for him, and it's not for me. And if God has put me in a position of responsibility or authority, that's for the Lord and not for me. And if God chooses to use somebody else, that's okay. If I'm the elder of Ephraim and God chooses someone from weapon that sticks in Gilead and has him deliver Israel, that's great. Maybe I should just look around for a second and say, oh yeah, he had him wipe out the Ammonites, so I better get rid of these Philistines. Instead, I just focus on, whoa. I should have been in the headlines. I should have been the one leading the charge there. I should have gotten all the fame and glory. And I got to watch myself. How do I respond when I'm not included? And is it because I think I'm more important than I actually am?